We're going to solve the world's problems, and I'm joined by farmer and columnist Steve Wynn-Harris on his Hawke's Bay farm. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Jesse. How's things?
Good. So how has the weather been treating you?
Oh, it's been good. No, we've been good here. They had that terrible storm, of course, further south. But no, in this part of the world, it's lovely. We're very dry, but we've got feed, and NIWA and Met Service are saying that with the La Nina weather pattern, we might expect a weather change to move from the west, which is our sort of normal airflow, which is dry for me here, around to the east. So we are hoping that they're right, and in October, November, we could get some easterly rainfall. So, yeah, that would be very much appreciated.
You've got farm safety on your mind today, Steve.
I have, yeah. Just before we talk about that, listen, I've been on the farm with my headphones on, with my helmet on, listening to you, and you had that nice interview with Utak Sun, because it's Korean Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And he's a chef, and he talked about his Korean meat dishes, and including the black pudding. Jesse, did you know it was World Vegetarian Day today?
It's not a good day to be talking about pig's blood pudding, is it?
Well, you're so woke, mate. I thought you would be onto that. But you thought you redeemed yourself.
Come on, give me a break. What?
Well, you redeemed yourself because you then talked about sprouted bircher muesli in the next interview.
Yeah, all right, you'll keep. Speaking of which, one of our listeners has texted you about food. They want to know, do you think the price of food is too cheap to encourage regenerative or even sustainable farming practices?
Is it too cheap to encourage that? Probably two different issues. But certainly, if you're going to do regenerative farming or organic farming, you need to get higher prices for the food that you produce, because there are costs in terms of your production. So I guess that you could argue that. But the market determines the cost of food, it's supply and demand, and that's how it is at the moment.
Yeah, okay. So farm safety, what's on your mind?
Front page of the Dominion Post today, talking about danger down on the farm, and it's on my mind because a young man in my, well, in the district next to me, was killed tragically on his four-wheeler at the beginning of the week.
I'm sorry to hear that.
A young man with two small kiddies, and, you know, it just, each time it happens, and it happens too many times, you know, it is a statistic, it's a figure, but it's also people's lives and, you know, just terrific tragedies. So, you know, if we're talking about solving the world's problems, I mean, a big problem for my sector is how dangerous it is. We're second most dangerous after logging in terms of industries. And these quads don't account for all of the deaths on farms, but I think this year there's been 17 deaths already on farms, and six of those have involved quads, which are the big four-wheelers. And the problem is they're very heavy, they're 400 or 500 kilograms. And if you're on one and it rolls, often you get lucky because four or five of these quads roll every day. So a lot of people do get lucky, but of course in the end your luck can run out. So yeah, we just have to, you know, think and be very cautious around these things. Use roll bars, which are called crush protection devices, helmets. Be careful, mindful also that accidents happen at the end of the day when we're tired. I use my own two-wheeler as often as I can because it's you know, it's a lot safer, and I carry a safety locator beacon if the worst comes to the worst and you're able to set it off. But yeah, just got to be really careful out there, not just in farming but in all industries and, you know, even on the roads.
What's going wrong, do you think? Is it she'll be right? And by the way, I'm not speaking specifically about the accident this week, but just in general the trend and the and the high numbers of accidents on quad bikes. Is it the she'll be right attitude?
Yeah, I think that is still a little bit of it. I mean, we've been talking about it. I'm in the rural media, and we've been talking about this stuff for a long time, and we have seminars and training and things like that. There is still a bit of that. And, I mean, look, I'm not perfect. I haven't rolled a four-wheeler, but on my farm and coming up 40-odd years, I've had several close calls. You know, I've been lucky. And I said to Jane the other day, after this latest accident, I said, oh, you know, what do you think has been my best contribution to our marriage? You know, is it that I've been a good breadwinner or a good dad? She thought, yes, maybe. And I said, oh, it's probably that I've managed to come home alive and uninjured for nearly 40 years.
Yeah.
And as I just said, some of that is luck, you know. I got away with it.
So there's physical health and there's mental health too, huh?
Yeah. So on the positive story is I went up to Wairakei Golf Course and had a game of golf there yesterday. It was a Farmstrong fundraiser, and it was a big field of people there, and actually very few farmers. It was a lot of agribusinesses and even businesses not involved with farming. And there was a big auction, and they raised, this was subsequent to the game of golf, they raised, I think it was $40,000 to $50,000, which is going to go to Farm Strong.
Great.
Which is a support network for farmers, a great resource on the internet. I mean, anyone can go on there, just Google it up and have a look at what they've got there. And the chief executive, Gerald Vaughan, had a little speech, and he had a great story. Like, this is last night. He told us a story of a fellow who said that he got a bit stroppy in a meeting and sort of stalked out and went home. And that night he got 6 phone calls from different people asking him if he was okay. Now, that probably wouldn't have it wouldn't have happened in my sector 20, 30, 40 years ago. But 6 people were concerned enough and were prepared to pick up their phone just to check that fellow was okay, which I thought was good.
Yeah. And there seems to be growing awareness. I mean, the idea of a golf tournament to fundraise for a trust that supports mental health, you know, 20 years ago, that would have been probably viewed as a bit out there, would it?
I guess so. But as one of the few farmers, there was a few sheep and beef farmers and dairy farmers there, but we all found it, we talked about it afterwards, we all found it very humbling that all these businesses had come along and put their hands in their pockets and supported this very worthy cause. So, no, it was great, really good.
Hey, here's another question for you, Steve, that's come in. What is a kilo of milk solids and how many of these does a cow produce?
Gosh, I mean, sheep and beef farmer, but I did used to know that. I think that I'm going to sort of make it up. Someone will fact check. But Trump gets away with it. So I think it's about 350 kilos of milk solids a year from a cow. And how much does it cost? Well, they're getting paid about just over $7 a kilo for the season just gone. So that's what they get paid for it. But yeah, let's not go any deeper into that because I'm at the edge of my knowledge.
Okay, fair enough then. Hey, what about, did you feel sorry for those farmers down south with the snow coming in right on lambing season?
Yes, and it brings up that, it's not a perennial one, but often, you know, people, you've probably got questions there, you know, why do they lamb at this time of the year? But we lamb to match the grass. Yes, so to answer your question, I feel terribly sorry for them because of all the experiences that you can have. There's nothing worse in farming than a lambing storm. It's just hideous. It's terrible. But we match the when the feed's coming away in the spring. You know, you'll all be flat out mowing your lawns in Auckland at the moment, and that's when the feed demand is going up from the animals, calves or cows and sheep. And so that's why they're lambing now. And if you left your rams out with the ewes all year, this is when they'd be lambing anyway. You know, it's just the natural cycle of animals.
Okay. Finally, Steve, you note that there seems to be a new dialogue during this election campaign about farming and the primary sector. What have you noticed?
Yeah, last time we were probably the whipping boys. We were a contentious issue in the political dialogue. But this time, probably as a result of COVID-19 and the fact that, you know, the hospitality sector and the tourism sector are really in trouble. But agriculture and the primary sector is still producing very well and is an important part of the economy going forward in terms of the way how we pay our way in the world and pay off all this debt that we're incurring to get through this pandemic. So there's definitely, from all sides, different parties, there's definitely been a discussion about agriculture and its place in the economy and as part of this country. You know, we've always been dependent on agriculture, 17 or 18% of GDP. It has never gone away, but at times we've been out of favour, and that's how it has felt for farmers in recent years, probably over the last sort of 5 or 8 years. But yeah, so there's been a refreshing change in the discussion by the politicians when they're talking about different political topics. So that's been really good to see.
Hey, I just wanted to share some of the feedback that's coming on quad bikes, and it's a bit of a mix. So Charlotte says what's going wrong is that there's no will to put safety ahead of economic gains in farming, and that's possibly related to a text from Mike. He says, could you ask Steve why roll cages and seatbelts aren't compulsory on quad bikes? Presumably that's a financial issue. Any thoughts on that?
To answer Charlotte's question, I don't think it's financial. I mean, we're using these vehicles that are incredibly handy and useful, but they're not manufactured for the purposes that we use them for sometimes. I don't think people are cutting costs, making shortcuts on cost. Yes, roll bars are not compulsory, but they're very highly recommended, and a lot of us have them on our bikes, and that's becoming more common. Seatbelts, you can't wear a seatbelt on a four-wheel. In fact, that would be worse, actually, because you'd be trapped on it if it was rolling with no chance of being thrown off or getting off it. And then we have side-by-side. There is quite a move towards side-by-sides, which, you know, that's where you sit inside the vehicle, and they have roll bars and seatbelts. And there have still been accidents and fatalities in those, but they are safer. So there is a trend towards away from four-wheelers and towards side-by-sides.
Okay, and someone else says, and I haven't fact-checked these figures, but they say 80,000 quad bikes in use on farms, 1,825 rollovers per year, and 0.006% results in a fatality. So I think they're making the point that although they stick out, these accidents, when they happen, perhaps in comparison to the amount of quad bike use that's going on, perhaps they're not all that high.
Yeah, and that might be the case, but when you are involved in one of those 0.006 fatalities or accidents, then, you know, that tragedy overcomes any statistics. But it would be good if it was zero, wouldn't it? And it's the same with the road toll and our suicide rate. We just got to keep working on these things and get them down.
Hey, nice to talk to you. Thanks, Steve. Lots to talk about, lots to think about this week. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, GTO. I appreciate the opportunity.
Steve Wynn-Harris, looking at things from a rural perspective.